So Neil, how did Villainy get its start?
We kind of got together about 5 years ago. A couple of us had been in a band previously together, and that sort of we just lost interest in what we're doing, and we kind of did nothing for a few years. And then we picked up Dave, who's our drummer now, and just started making a whole bunch of new tunes, and found a producer pretty quick and decided we were going to make a record. So we went ahead and we made our first record, which is an album called Mode Set Clear. We put that out in New Zealand, and we ended up winning a music award, a TUI, which is kind of like the New Zealand version of like a Grammy or a, you know, a Brit Award in the UK, that kind of thing. So that was awesome. It's all kind of, it accelerated pretty quick. I mean, I can't really believe it was 5 years ago that we started. Now it sort of feels like, you know, it feels like kind of 2 years to me. So it's kind of crazy now that we're sort of like we've put our second record out, and here I am talking to someone in the US. It's awesome.
Nice. Now, I want to jump ahead a little bit before I jump back to the other questions, but you've got some killer news about who you're going to be playing with here in the next few weeks. If you want to share that, I'll let you tell everybody.
So we actually heard about a month ago, but it only got announced like a day or so ago that we're going to open for AC/DC at their two New Zealand shows down here. So they're doing the whole stadium extravaganza down here. We're sort of playing to like 60,000 people a night. So it's going to be crazy. We've never done anything quite that big. So. It's a total buzz, and like, you know, you can't beat AC/DC for stadium rock, you know. It's sort of like, I think I was saying to someone else, it's kind of there's two bands left in that league who you'd want to play with, and it's kind of them and the Rolling Stones, and that's about it. So
exactly,
it's awesome to be able to, you know, be associated with a band like that.
Yeah, right now there's bands all over the world going, you know, holy shit.
It's pretty mental, yeah.
Well, I mean, like, when you first found out, when you first got the call saying you guys are in, like, Flynn, did you, like, not sleep for a day?
We were on the road, so it was real weird because we couldn't tell anyone, and it was, like, the worst thing, you know? Like, we were sworn to secrecy. It was like, ah, oh, fuck, you know, I just want to scream from the rooftops, you know? So I'm so happy that like the news is out now and we can talk about it.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you didn't try to I can't tell anybody, but think alternating current, direct current. You didn't do anything like that.
it was just weird. It was all really internalized. And so, you know, like we were all kind of celebrating in the van, leaving the show and stuff like, but there wasn't really an opportunity to kind of, get kind of like that stupidly excited about it, because it was just kind of like a band party, you know, like the four of us just in the van, just going crazy, talking about how ridiculous it is.
Oh, I would have been pumped with adrenaline if that was my band. I'd have been running beside the van.
Yeah, man. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, we were like, you know, what the hell? This isn't real. But yeah, you know, when you can't talk about it to anyone, it's just in a way that makes it all the more surreal, because it's just like this huge secret.
Doesn't it on a certain level kind of suck though that you can't tell anybody, because you're like sitting there like all, I mean, it's got to be building up.
And I think you know, like, it doesn't really seem real until I'm having conversations like this, and now I'm sort of like, oh yeah, fuck, we're opening for AC/DC.
Yeah, exactly.
This is an actual thing, you know.
wait till AC/DC tweets to you, man. That's gonna be awesome.
Yeah. So, I don't know, do those guys know how to use Twitter?
I don't know. I think their kids do it.
Dude, I mean, if I can shake Angus Young's hand, I will be very, very, very happy. Like,
yeah. Oh man.
Kind of sick. To play the show is just, you know, being in their presence is a massive privilege.
Man, I know, man. I mean, this is the thing you're going to be talking about 20 years from now, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. And that's, you know, that's what's so crazy, surreal about it. Like you say, it's not very often an opportunity like this even comes up. Like, I saw the Rolling Stones play down here last year, but shows of this size in New Zealand, at least, you know, they happen every couple of years, and that's sort of it. So the opportunity, let alone being able to do it, is just insane.
Nice. Well, let's talk about your new album, Dead Sight. It came out September 18th. What was the writing like on that album? Because I've heard it, and I mean, you guys have like just this massive sound, like Syria and Safe Passages and tracks like that. I mean, they kind of boom through my speakers, and I don't even have a subwoofer. But you know what though? Also, I gotta tell you too, man. I actually became a fan of Villainy a year ago when I heard Ammunition.
Oh, wicked! Cool. Oh, you're ahead of the curve.
Thanks. Well, but that also makes me think you almost sound like a different band between Ammunition and Syria.
Yeah, I think we took a pretty different approach with this album. I mean, the first record that helicopter isn't going to mess with your shit, is it?
No. Go ahead.
Cool. Sweet. Sorry, I'll start again. Yeah, like when we tracked the first record compared to now, I think we were quite a different band. The first album, like, we hadn't made a record. We wrote most of those songs kind of in isolation, and then we tracked them straight away. So we hadn't played them live, that kind of thing. So the songs were just the songs. And, you know, we approached them, in one way only. Whereas with the new record, you know, we've done a whole bunch of tours. With kind of a show, quite a big show, nothing like AC/DC, but you know, some cool things down here, and I guess we're just more kind of experienced and more familiar with each other as players as well. So a big objective for Dead Sight was to kind of get in there and track as much of it live as we could, and so you sort of had us sort of in the room playing together for every single take. And most of that we kept, so what you're hearing on the record is you know, live takes of us playing, not sort of this jigsaw of individual tracks, which, you know, admittedly the first record was like that, and I think most rock albums these days are made like that, and that's why they kind of feel a little inhumane, and, sorry, not inhumane, but inhuman would be a better way to put it, and, you know, this sort of robot aesthetic, and that's what we did not want.
Nice. Now, how much of the album do you think was recorded live, if you had to give it a percentage?
I mean, like, pretty much all of it. Like, every single track was done live as sort of the basis of it. So all the drums, all of the bass, and most of the guitars were done live. I mean, I cut the vocals separately simply because it's too hard to do that stuff live. Like, you know, we're in a room together, you can't isolate it properly and that sort of thing. So, but, you know, all of the kind of noises that you hear in the tracks, you know, we left a lot of that stuff in. You'll hear weird kind of fragments of sound and stuff, and that's the sound of the microphones in the room from us moving around. Like, all those kind of imperfections that you don't get when you've got someone sitting in front of a computer slicing all that stuff out.
But that gives it an ambience, though, I think.
Totally, yeah. You know. And that was the whole idea. Who wants to, you know, I mean, although we hear it every day, like, you go and watch a band live and all of that stuff's there, what's the point in taking it out for the record?
Yeah, well, like, for example, the Beatles, if you remember any of the Beatles songs, they did the same thing you're talking about. And you hear that, like, when Paul McCartney's playing piano on Hey Jude, you hear him, you know, moving around in the piano bench. Hmm. You know, stuff like that. Yeah. And it gives it an ambience, and it also, you know, tends to give you what I call happy accidents, where, you know, things were played, you know, differently than you expected or that you'd practiced.
Completely, yeah.
You know, which I think lends to credibility.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, just because you can edit something into perfection doesn't mean you should. And, you know, the rock music that I like overwhelmingly is kind of the sort of pre-mid-90s stuff when bands were still recording to tape, you know, like, I think that's part of what made the grunge era so great, is that whilst those records are really polished, those dudes were still playing to tape, you know, so they still had to nail the shit out of it. And I don't think you get that as much now. Like, we'd be standing in the room, some of those songs we did in two takes, some of them we did in like 15 because it just wasn't good enough. And, you know, our producer was just like pointing at us or yelling at us from the other side of the room, you know, in the control room, telling us to do it again. That's what gets the good take.
Yeah. And with you doing it the way you're doing it
as well.
Yeah. Well, with the way you're doing it, it's like when they say, you know, new take, you're starting the song over from the beginning.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly. Yeah.
But that's...
Yeah, we're not punching in to fix one little chord.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, what would you personally consider your favorite song on Dead Sight, and why?
You know, that's a really hard question. I know that's sort of a cliched answer, but I think they're all so different. I guess the one that's kind of personally most important to me is The National Guard, which is the one which is sort of sonically the most removed from the album as well. It's a very, like, slow burner, rhythmic orientated song with kind of like a much more sort of subdued vocal take. But I mean, for that one, I guess the reason for that is I sort of wrote that one over kind of about a 2-year period. I kind of had this sort of rotating chord line for ages, and I discovered it hidden inside my phone in like a voice memo or something, and picked it up. And at that certain time in my life, we'd just come off the road and I was tired, and it sort of brought out this, you know, this idea of kind of being disassociated from real life, which touring kind of does to you. And that's sort of what that song was framed around. And that became, you know, a really big thematic piece for the record as well. And just sort of, you know, second album, kind of grappling with the idea of being in a band and kind of doing this touring life. And then, you know, we all come home and we go back into normal life and have, you know, our 9-to-5 jobs and all that sort of thing. So that song for me was kind of like open that window.
I can see that too. I mean, it kind of shows too, because to me it sounded like a song that was kind of hard to write.
Yeah. I mean, I think once it got going, it sort of came together. But you know, it has a very sort of direct personal meaning to me. Not to say that the others do, but you know, I wrote a lot of it in isolation, whereas the others were kind of written with the band. So there's kind of that aspect of it as well.
Mm. Now, which song would you think best represents the band itself, Villainy?
Tough question, man. yeah, I mean, again, it kind of depends which version of the band you're looking for. I mean, my favorite song probably as kind of, you know, that kind of vibe is probably No Future. I really love how just savage it is. And, you know, it's like a dirty punk rock track, basically. And it's a huge amounts of fun to play live. And it kind of, for me, epitomizes that total raw element of the album.
Nice. Now, going back to your live show, AC/DC isn't the first mega act you've played with. I mean, I'm looking here at Offspring, you know, the Offspring, Incubus, Seether, so on and so forth. What's it like playing with huge acts like that versus playing on your own?
You know what? I mean, other than the size of the stages and the size of the audiences, it's a different thing, but as far as playing with those guys goes, it's still just a show, you know. You know, meeting those guys and hanging out with them, they're all just, you know, musicians who believe in what they're doing and really like are super passionate about, you know, being there for the music. And you know, that was particularly really evident with Incubus. Like, they would, you know, they'd get up on stage and sound check for like an hour playing cover songs and stuff just for the fun of it. And that's really awesome to see. Like, you know, they're real people and that's their job and they love it.
Nice. Now, I got to ask you this question. See, my band, we opened up for a few heavy hitters back in the early 2000s, late 90s. I won't mention who, but the reason of the question is, or the reason I'm saying that is because, you know, when we did
you've got to lead on who, man.
Well, what I was going to say, when we did that, the guy, you know, they were telling us, you know, they told us little things to watch out for, like, you know, well, when you're out there, watch out for water bottles. I mean, have you ever had anyone, yeah, right. I mean, have you ever had anyone tell you stuff like that?
Actually, man, the only time that ever happened was the first show we did with Incubus in this arena in Auckland. It was like 8,000 people or something, and I think there was one that came across and it landed on the stage in front of me, and I managed to like soccer kick it back out into the audience. But yeah, I think that's the only time. I mean, I've actually thought about that with the AC/DC gigs. You know, there's gonna be 60,000 you know, metalheads out there in front of us who are, by all, you know, kind of rightly so, probably just there for the main act. So
I hope that I hope they're kind, and I guess that's kind of down to us to put on a good show for them, you know, so that no one feels like they need to throw bottles.
I think there's just, I just think some of them are dicks. I think they just go there to throw, you know, like they go there.
Totally.
They go there with $200 and about 100 bottles.
No, it's a, yeah. On the one hand, I understand it. On the other hand, like you say, it's just, don't be an asshole.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, I remember going to, you know, even shows I go to now, like I'm genuinely interested in what support act's about and why they're there. And you know, you kind of go, well, the headliner at least had some hand in deciding that they should be there, so you know, they must be worth at least kind of, you know, having
exactly.
a listen to see what they're about.
Exactly. And all support acts are one hit away from being a headliner.
Totally. Yeah. And it's funny, you know, you go through like some of like, you know, the old tours and stuff which go through, and I can't think of any off the top of my head, but you're totally right, you know. You see this kind of changing of the guard. Actually, this isn't rock and roll at all, but I remember, I think the Pussycat Dolls came to New Zealand like 6 years ago, and Lady Gaga was their support act. And, you know, nobody remembers the Pussycat Dolls now. Like, that's it's a strange example because it's, you know, pop acts, but
exactly.
Case in point, really.
Exactly. I think some of the Pussycat Dolls are going to be on the next Big Brother, if that tells you anything.
Well, there you go. That's so, like you say, changing of the guard.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, let's talk about your current tour that you're doing with Jericho and Sidonia. How's that going?
We haven't actually started kicked that off yet. So I'm in New Zealand at the moment. We fly to Australia next Thursday, and then it kicks off on Friday
the 13th.
It should be cool. So we're going into Brisbane, and then we drive down to Sydney, which is always a cool place, and then we kind of go across to Melbourne. If your listeners kind of look on a map, they'll work out pretty quick that we're talking about like 12-hour drives a day, so that's going to be interesting. Although, you know, I'm sure that's pretty normal for the United States, but in New Zealand, it's sort of like an 8-hour run is a long way here. and then we finish up in a place called Adelaide before we come back, and yeah, then we're doing a couple of really tiny little club shows here, just as sort of warm ups for the AC/DC shows, and then we land into that. So it's going to be a pretty full on kind of like 8 weeks.
Nice. Sidonia's an awesome act too. I listen to them as well.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing both those bands play. I hear they're really well respected up in over in Australia. I don't think they've ever been over here, so we might have to host them.
Yeah, definitely, man. Get them over there too. I mean, yeah, because they're awesome, and you guys are going to complement each other really well. Let me just tell you that. I mean, because you guys are in the same vein, but you're different. Do you ever have any plans on playing the States?
Dude, I would love to. I guess it's just kind of like doing the business side of it and things, and trying to get someone to put the record out, and then getting up there and playing to some people. But, you know, honestly, there's nothing I can think of that would be better than just sitting in a van and driving around for like 6 months playing every corner of your country.
Man.
I love traveling up there. Like I came up to Coachella actually in April and drove around a bit, and that was awesome. And unfortunately I wasn't playing, but yeah, I'd love to do that. So any excuse.
See, I think you guys would go good. I mean, you ought to call Matt and Kent, because I think you guys in Like a Storm would have a nice ass tour.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, like I said, we knew each other years ago, and I haven't caught up with them for a while, but they've been killing it up there, doing heaps of shows.
Yeah, Matt'll do it if you push him.
good to know.
Yeah, just call him up and guilt trip him a little bit. So
yeah,
you know, pay her forward, man. You know,
for sure. Yeah.
So what? let's talk about some of your videos, man, because you guys have some lush, well produced videos. Before the interview, I watched Safe Passage, and earlier this evening I saw Syria, and like I said, I there was a while last year while I was putting Ammunition on infinite repeat. But the production value is just astounding. I mean, it looks major label.
Thank you. I mean, I guess, you know, we just try and find the best people we can and spend a lot of time kind of, making them look good. Like, I don't think it's actually that hard to do these days. You know, like we were talking earlier about how easy it is to get gear and stuff, and finding, you know, just finding the right people to work on. And the Syria video was actually done by Thomas, our guitarist. So he actually cut that whole thing together and filmed it on, I think, like a Canon 5D or something. So, Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just kind of putting the same sort of, amount of effort and attention into that as you do into your music. And I think how people receive you visually is really important these days, especially because, like as you say, it's, you jump onto YouTube and you discover bands by watching the videos these days. It's kind of the more regular route rather than, putting a CD
Exactly.
on or whatever.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and do you think that artists coming up and coming today, 'cause I would call you guys halfway from up and coming to just totally established and killing it. 'Cause I mean, 'cause I think you guys have a little ways to go, but I think you guys are like 10 inches away from, being like at the, like global. You
Yeah,
know,
that's awesome. I appreciate that.
for lack of a better term. But I think, do you think it's easier, like nowadays, with the tools and the internet and everything else, social media and all that, for acts to get noticed? Because, like you said earlier, like I'm in the United States, you're in New Zealand, and I'm interviewing you.
Yeah, you know what? It's a weird one because it's yeah, I think once you kind of get noticed by the right people, it becomes a lot easier and it's kind of easier to put yourself out there as well. But because it's easier, the there's that many more fish in the sea as well. So I think there's a lot more competition for that attention. And my impression at least is that the music industry, once you get to the top, it's still very small. So it's sort of like transcending that stuff to kind of climb up there. So yeah, it's a weird one. I think it's the same sort of challenges. You just have kind of more, more tools in your belt, and there's more ways to try and do it.
And yeah, because I mean, if you think about it, like, I don't know, to give away my age here, my band was in the 90s, and our idea of social media and social networking was printing up a bunch of flyers and getting the staple guns out.
Yeah,
You
yeah.
know, like, and I'm willing to bet you guys have never done that.
You know what? I did that with previous bands, like in kind of like the mid 2000s. Was definitely a thing, but like, yeah, I mean, I'm old enough to remember MySpace, which is kind of weird, like it's it, but it is, it's so strange. Like that was for a while, that was kind of like that was where music was discovered, right? And now that's gone. So and that's sort of a challenge as well, sort of like going, well, where are people at? Like, how do you reach them? Like, I don't think Facebook's quite as powerful as it was 2 years ago, for example. So things like, Instagram and like Snapchat and stuff are suddenly like the way to do it. So it's kind of like the
And
scenes
Twitter
keep
even.
moving around.
Yeah, and Twitter
Yeah,
even.
yeah.
Well, Twitter just bought Twitter this year, bought SoundCloud.
Oh,
So
right. I didn't know that.
yeah.
Cool.
So, well, I'm. Let me ask you this then: if would you rather keep going the way you're going and doing it new school, the way current artists are doing it, or at least the smart ones are doing it, or what if Virgin or EMI or Capitol or something offered you a standard first record deal?
I reckon I would probably still go new school, man. I mean, that's a loaded question, hey, but
It's a trick
like
question, actually.
I just yeah, I mean, I just don't think, like there's kind of that old way, new way sort of thing going on, and I think some of the labels have worked it out and some of them haven't. So it sort of depends who you're working with and what they're doing. The last thing you want is a label that's focused on CD sales because that is, that's only going to scratch the surface, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, what do you think about the? Because a lot of major labels are doing exclusivities now. Like a major artist will come out with an album, and then they'll do a deal with one store, and that's the only place on planet Earth you can get that album.
Yeah, like what that Compton record was just out on Apple or something, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I reckon like that stuff works for huge bands. I remember when Radiohead put In Rainbows out and they did it for free and everyone was like, oh my God, the everyone down everyone oh, I think it was Pay What You Want, and apparently they made heaps of money out of it. And it's sort of like, of course they did, they're Radiohead,
Well, and most people will pay money if they appreciate the music enough.
But I don't think the same thing applies to new bands. I think if we put our album up for free, 95% of people would download it for free, and that's not like a that's not judging our fans or judging our following or anything like that. It's just, you know, we haven't been around long enough to build that level of loyalty that a band like Radiohead has to be able to do that. So it's kind of weird because you end up with this expectation that that's what you should do, but it's maybe not that realistic.
Yeah, well, and sometimes I think, well, certain acts, like for example, U2. If you remember last year, U2 gave their new album away for free on iTunes, and I think in their case, it cheapened it.
Totally. Well, I mean, I remember, you know, I remember all the stuff on social media talking about, you know, I don't want this record, and I think it came up on like my iPhone, and you know, I think I listened to it once and didn't think much of it, and who knows, maybe there was some good music on it, but no one cared because of what surrounded it.
Yeah, well, there was no mythology around it because if you remember in past albums they've done, they always built up a mythology. Like they spent 2 years recording it and they kept telling you they were spending all this time recording it. And then all these posters flew up everywhere and then Twitter blew up and all that other stuff. And then it got released and there's lines around the stores. You know, but now this, it was kind of like, okay, like let's half-ass an album and let Apple have it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, imagine if Tool put their next record out as a free download with a bottle of Pepsi.
Exactly.
It just wouldn't work.
Exactly. Well, you know, having said all that, how do you think bands these days the best, you know, can make money? What's the best way they can support themselves?
I think it's touring. Yeah, straight up, like just playing shows and kind of building a good live following. I think you know, it's people, certain people will pay for music, but a lot of people won't, and I don't really expect them to. You know, like we put a lot of effort into making sure that we got this latest record out on vinyl, for that reason, because I kind of believe that, you know, if you're going to buy a physical thing, vinyl's kind of the best version of that. So
yeah, I
we went
love
ahead
it.
And did that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, I think going to shows and building a live following and kind of, you know, also making your shows something special, and I don't necessarily mean theatrical, but like, you know, genuine and passionate and believable. You know, the last thing you want to do is go and see a band that just phones it in and, you know, plays their record exactly how it is on the record. I think that's boring and kind of a little bit pointless.
Exactly. Well, but you know what the sad part about that is the album is the most labor, time, and financial you know, burden a band can have. Touring is literally showing up with your gear and then playing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, the old way was like you toured to promote your record, like you toured to get people to buy the CD. I think now it's kind of like you use your record as a way to get people to consider coming to watch you play. And I'm all right with that. Like, you know, there's nothing better than getting up on stage and playing a song and having people react to it because they know it, you know, and that happens for us down here. And it's awesome. You know, we were playing, we did a tour recently just as the album came out here, and kind of like the first show we played, the album was just out, but like even like three shows in, people were singing along to songs that they'd never heard before, on a record that had been out for 4 days. And that's amazing. Like, it's just, you know, you can't do that any other way, and it's kind of worth it.
And that's really vindication that it is worth it.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, you know, that response, and you know, it's the best of both worlds, right? You know, they've bought the CD or they've listened to it on Spotify or whatever, and they've come to the show and they bought the ticket and you know, they're really connected to it, and that's amazing.
Nice. Now, what is Villainy have coming up after this tour with Sidonia and Jericho and after the monumental ACD extravaganza?
So we're gonna do a national tour back down here in New Zealand. And that'll probably take us through kind of to like February, March, and I think from there, it's sort of anyone's guess. I mean, as I say, I'd love to get further abroad and sort of look at, you know, getting into the US or heading over to Europe next year. And that's just kind of about kind of getting the album released up there and working on those sorts of things. So, I mean, hey, hopefully we see you sort of mid-year, something like that.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, man. I'll buy you beers.
Awesome.
So now where can we find Villainy online?
You can go to www.villainymusic.com. Or facebook.com/villainymusic. Those are probably the two best places, and then you can jump off those into YouTube and Twitter and Instagram and all that kind of stuff.